2015. The time is 7:07, and the date is October 9th. We are meeting in the Aspen Conference Room, located on the third floor of the Secretary of State's office at 1700 Broadway. The chair, I will be with you in just a second. Right now, I'll go ahead and take roll call. I'll start at the end. Would you start for us?
Steve Renova, County Commissioner.
Jennifer Levin, Disability Law. Jennifer Levin, Disability Law, Colorado.
Connie Engmeyer, Morgan County and former County Clerk and Recorder.
Donetta Davidson.
Clarissa Thomas.
Dwight Shellman. And Chuck, if you're on the line, if you can introduce yourself.
Yeah, Chuck Rohrman, El Paso County Clerk and Recorder.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Clarissa Thomas taking over for Donetta Davidson. Okay, so all of the members of the committee are present today, except for Teague Simonton. For anyone who wishes to testify, please sign in on the sign-up sheet that is on the back of the table somewhere. The hearing is broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website. Public restrooms are located right around the corner. And members of the committee, please remember to state your name and speak up before speaking. And that's it. Dwight, take it over.
Okay. The agenda for today's meeting, this is Dwight Shellman from the State Elections Division. The agenda for today's meeting is almost entirely devoted to the topic of risk-limiting audits, and to the members of the public here, I'd like to introduce Philip Stark, who is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, in their statistics department, who's a leading authority in the country on conducting risk-limiting audits in elections. And so what we will do in today's meeting is I asked Dr. Stark to attend personally today to generally describe the kind of conceptual underpinnings of risk-limiting audits, generally describe how they actually work on the ground. And a lot of that is going to vary depending on which voting system we're talking about. And then I would like to kind of deviate from our ordinary format to allow members of the public here who've taken the time to attend today's meeting to be able to ask questions of Dr. Stark. And once we review the risk-limiting audit portion, there is one evaluation form that I would like to get the committee's comments on and final approval of today, and we will do that after Dr. Stark, who does not like being called Dr. Stark, by the way, you should call him Philip, after Philip finishes helping us with risk-limiting audits. One of the items I have in the agenda, let me just get it out of the way quickly, is just to remind maybe people who haven't listened to or attended these meetings previously, the Secretary of State temporarily approved four voting systems. They are the temporarily approved providers are Clear Ballot, ESNS, Dominion Voting Systems, and Hart InterCivic. Each of those temporarily approved systems are being piloted in two counties in the November 2015 coordinated election. And the counties are, for Clear Ballot, Gilpin and Adams County. For Dominion, Mesa County and the City and County of Denver. For Hart, Douglas County and Garfield County. And who am I missing? ESNS is Jefferson County and Teller County. And that covers the recap of the temporarily approved systems and which counties are piloting them. So with that, what I'll do is just hand it over to Dr. Stark and, I mean, Philip, and we'll go from there.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me here. This is a really exciting moment, I think, for Colorado in being able to
specify a voting system that is easily auditable in order to be able to move forward and lead the nation in establishing routine risk-limiting audits in 2017. So it's very, very neat. I have one slide which I could present or I could just read from. If there's a VGA cable that I could use, is there one handy? Or otherwise, I'll just. It's not. There's not a lot of stuff there. It's fine.
Is it on a USB or
no?
I could put it on a USB disk. It's fine. Okay. So, why do we want election audits? What are audits good for? There are a lot of different things that you might want to audit for: quality control, process improvement, make sure the equipment is functioning at some level of accuracy. But the two things that risk-limiting audits are designed to do are to detect whether the outcome is wrong and to correct the outcome if it is wrong. And the paradigm shift in going to risk-limiting audits is really to say, in an ideal world, what would an audit do? An audit would keep us from announcing as the official outcome an outcome that's wrong. It would correct it before we make that mistake. So the distinguishing characteristic of a risk-limiting audit compared to other kinds of audits is they have a large pre-specified chance of correcting the outcome if the outcome is wrong. The risk limit is the largest possible chance that the most maliciously constructed wrong outcome would somehow slip through the audit process without being corrected. So if you audit to a risk limit of 1%, that means that even if the devil were programming the voting machines and doing the best job of hiding error, so forth and so on, there'd still be and somehow managed to make the outcome wrong, there'd still be at least a 99% chance that the outcome would be corrected before it was announced as official. The way that the outcome is corrected doesn't involve statistics. The way the outcome is corrected is by conducting a full count. Basically, the way a risk-limiting audit works is it says, I'm going to look at ballots or batches of ballots, or I'm going to look at the physical artifact, the voter-verified piece, until I am persuaded that there's no point in looking at any more, that the evidence is so strong, that the outcome is right, that it's pointless to continue. It's almost certainly just a waste of time. The art in this is to have a large chance of correcting the outcome if the outcome is wrong, but to minimize the amount of work you have to do when the outcome is right. And since when you start the audit process, you don't know whether it's right or wrong, that's this evidence collecting process until you have strong evidence that you can stop. And statistics and random sampling methods let you collect scientifically persuasive evidence with a minimum of effort. They'd let you look at the smallest number of ballots that still gives you a large probability of continuing the audit if the audit would show that the original outcome was wrong, but stopping as quickly as possible otherwise. So minimizing the workload is really what the art is all about, minimizing the workload while keeping the property that you are have a large chance of correcting the outcome if the outcome is wrong. So how do you do this? Well, it involves taking a random sample of ballots or of batches of ballots. Random is a word that we use in everyday conversation in a non-technical sense, and I mean this in a technical sense instead. And one analogy that I think helps get this across is thinking about tasting soup to find out if the soup is too salty. A random sample of soup amounts to stirring up the soup really thoroughly and then taking out a tablespoon. A haphazard sample of soup is you just stick the spoon in the soup without looking and taste it. So if there's a big pile of undissolved salt at the bottom of the pot of soup, that's not a very good procedure. Stirring is much, much better. You're going to get a more representative sample that way. And moreover, we all know from experience that a tablespoon is enough soup to taste, whether it's a 1-quart pot or a 50-gallon cauldron of soup. What matters is that you stir it really thoroughly before you take it out. So by analogy, the number of ballots that you need to look at in auditing an election in general depends on the tolerance for salt in the election, that is the level of error in tabulating ballots that would result in the wrong person, the wrong position, candidate, et cetera, winning or appearing to win. If you need to be able to find a smaller level of salt, you need a bigger spoon, but it still doesn't matter how big the pot is. So you will end up looking at roughly the same number of ballots depending on the margin in the election, not depending on the number of ballots cast in the election. By margin, I mean the margin is a percentage of ballots cast. So it's the margin as a percentage that kind of drives the workload on the assumption that the machines and the whole process of running the elections has gone properly and the outcome really is right. In practice, to draw a random sample of ballots, you don't stir them like soup. You assign each ballot an identifier, and you draw the identifiers at random using a computer. It's good to start that random selection process using a real source of mechanical randomness like rolling dice. And in the audits that we've been conducting for the last few years, we literally take 10-sided dice and we roll them 20 times to get a very long random number, and we put that into the computer as a seed in the random number generator to then draw the larger sample of ballots. One of the nice things about using dice and translucent dice is everybody can look at them and verify that they look like they're fair, and you can involve the public in rolling the dice so that people know that it isn't rigged, that everybody had a chance to contribute to the randomness in this. What do we need as prerequisites in order to have risk-limiting audits? Well, the whole thing is theater if you don't know that the audit trail is complete and accurate. So a prerequisite for any of this is having good ballot security, good tracking of ballots, good accounting for ballots, and a good way of verifying that chain of custody has been maintained. So this sort of keeping track of the paper is essential, or the audit is really kind of pointless. It's theater. You need to know that the audit trail is complete and accurate. The second thing that you need is a ballot manifest. This is a word I made up, but it was by an analogy to like a shipping manifest, which the outside of a shipping container might have this thing on it that says, I have the following inside me, right? So similarly, what we'd like to know from each jurisdiction and each election is, I have this many ballots cast. They're organized into 147 bundles. Bundle number one has this many ballots in it. Ideally, it would even say bundle number one has this many ballots of this ballot style, this many ballots of that ballot style, so forth and so on. So keeping track of the ballots, it would involve an independent count of the number of ballots. It would not be that ballot manifest wouldn't be generated by the voting system, because it's the voting system we're trying to check. So you want this description of how many ballots and how they're organized to come from other processes where the local elections official has an independent count of the amount of paper. once we have those two ingredients, provided we have a paper trail in the first place, it's possible to do one kind of risk-limiting audit that's called a ballot polling audit. A ballot polling audit is analogous to an exit poll, except that instead of asking voters how they voted, we ask the ballots what the ballots say. This has a number of benefits. One, the ballots have to talk to us and the voters don't. We don't get the sampling bias. Another is the ballots accurately recall how they were voted, whereas voters don't always accurately recall or repeat how they voted. So if we see, for example, a large enough majority for Abraham Lincoln in a large enough sample of ballots, we can have high confidence that Abraham Lincoln really won the election. This is not checking whether the votes were tabulated accurately. It's not checking whether the total number of votes for Abraham Lincoln is right or wrong. It's just checking whether Abraham Lincoln really got a majority. And similarly, by looking at a random sample of ballots really drawn from all the ballots that were cast in the contest, you can verify things like city council, where it's, you know, vote for some number of people out of some list. You can, most of the voting systems that are out there, voting systems meaning sort of social choice rules, can be verified that way, except for things like instant runoff voting, ranked choice voting and whatnot, which are they in use in Colorado at all?
In some municipalities they are.
Okay. So for those, this method of verifying things hasn't yet been worked out, and I think it doesn't actually work. The problem with, so the nice thing about ballot polling audits is that really all you need is paper, and you need your paper to be well organized and kept track of. And it would be an option for Colorado moving forward to get started on statewide risk limiting audits sooner rather than later, even before the uniform voting system gets specified and purchased and deployed. The problem with ballot polling audits is that even though they don't require a lot, they don't make a lot of demands on the voting system for data export, so forth and so on, as the margin gets small, the number of ballots you have to look at to confirm the election gets very, very large, even if the outcome is right. So I'll be geeky for just a moment. The number of ballots you have to look at grows like the square of the reciprocal of the margin. So if the margin gets cut in half, you have to look at four times as many ballots typically. So it really grows very, very quickly as the margin gets narrow. You might need to look at tens of thousands of ballots from an election contest if the margin gets to be, you know, something like 0.5% or 1%, something like that. So that gets to be a problem. The other way of auditing things is a comparison audit, which comes more, it comes closer to verifying that the voting system actually performed properly, that it interpreted and tabulated the votes accurately, rather than merely checking the outcomes of the contests. For a comparison audit, in addition to having the ballot manifest and good ballot accounting so that you know that the chain, you know that the audit trail is accurate and complete, you also need the voting system to output subtotals in a way that those subtotals can be tracked to the pieces of paper that they purport to represent. The larger the batches that are represented in these subtotals, the more work there is on audit day. The way to minimize the amount of work that needs to be done is for the batches to consist of individual ballots. So that is to have a cast vote record exported from the voting system for each piece of paper, each ballot that was cast. It not only needs to be exported from the system, but it needs to be exported in a way that the cast vote record can be matched up with the piece of paper that it purports to represent, and the two can be compared so that a group of people, the auditors, the public, can look at the piece of paper and say, does this look like a vote for Abraham Lincoln or not? And look at the cast vote record and see whether they agree or disagree. Moreover, the list of cast vote records that gets exported from the system needs to be human readable and machine tabulatable. It needs to be, two different things have to happen with it. The way that a comparison audit works, you can think of it as having two components. The first component is the system says, here is the list of numbers that I added together to get the contest totals, and I claim that when I added them together, I got the following answers, that when I applied the social choice rule that this election is supposed to have, like majority, you know, or plurality, or two-thirds majority, or whatever it is, to this pile of data, I came up with these winners. And so the first thing to do is you take that same pile of data that the system says represents the ballots, and you check that if you apply the same rule to it, like majority rule or whatever, you get the same answer. You found that Abraham Lincoln won. So you check the arithmetic, and then the second stage is to check the data. Did the voting system actually add the right list of numbers? And almost invariably, if you're talking about voter-marked paper ballots, you will find that there are some discrepancies between how the voting system interpreted a piece of paper and how a group of human beings would interpret voter intent from the same piece of paper. And you need to, and that will be a discrepancy. And it, even if it's caused by a voter misbehaving, not following directions, or using a gel pen instead of a pencil or a ballpoint, or spilling barbecue sauce on their ballot, or, you know, whatever it is that caused the machine to misinterpret voter intent or to have an interpretation of voter intent that differs from how humans would read it, that gets taken into account in the confidence, and the audit will automatically look at enough ballots to produce convincing evidence that nonetheless the outcome is right, or it has a high probability of continuing on to a full hand count, which would thereby correct the outcome if the outcome is wrong. Okay, I'm babbling a little bit. So in order to do this, you need to be able to find the piece of paper that goes with the cast vote record and vice versa. The humans in the room who are comparing the cast vote record to their interpretation of the piece of paper need to be able to read that cast vote record. It needs to be understandable to the human eye as well. But to check the arithmetic to make sure that if all of the cast vote records were right, they sum to the contest result, that piece you want to do electronically. So this list also needs to be understandable by a computer. It needs to be machine readable, machine tabulatable. In order to audit contests that span jurisdictional boundaries, you're going to need naming conventions or IDs for contests and candidates so that you can aggregate results in an automatic way across counties. Ideally, the cast vote records would include an indication of overvotes and undervotes. Not all of the systems, I think, that are being examined this time do that. I think they just have votes versus non-votes. There are a number of open questions in conducting risk-limiting audits, especially at the level of states. Risk-limiting audits have been conducted now roughly 24 times in individual counties, sometimes auditing multiple contests at the same time, sometimes individual contests. But there has not yet been a completed risk-limiting audit of a contest that spans jurisdictional boundaries, like a statewide contest. So Colorado would be the first state to do this. I was mentioning earlier that we almost did it in Denmark. We were doing a risk-limiting audit of the Danish portion of the European parliamentary elections about a year and a half ago, and we were well underway auditing this, and the parliament decided that it was okay for the jurisdictions to destroy the ballots before we'd finish the audit. So we didn't quite finish. So again, the logistics of conducting multi-jurisdictional audits, which will require things like naming conventions, they will require thinking about how you will draw a random sample of ballots at the level of states, how you will escalate the audit if discrepancies are found that would cause the audit to expand, and so on. Another open question is the best way to be able to identify the piece of paper that goes with a given cast vote record. Right now, the way that has been used in practice, I think there are only two things that have been done in practice. One involves keeping the ballots in the same order in which they were scanned and relying on the order in which the records appear in the machine's output to then map them back to the physical ballots. That requires a system that doesn't deliberately shuffle the order of the cast vote records. Some systems do. The other way of trying to identify the piece of paper that goes with a given cast vote record is to imprint the ballot with a unique identifying number, either just before or just after it's scanned by the voting system. This is spooky if it's happening in a precinct count optical scan, because one worries about compromising voter anonymity. In central count optical scan, I think it's less of a concern because the ballots get jumbled together more thoroughly before they're scanned. Given that Colorado is primarily now vote by mail, it's presumably less of an issue if 90% of your ballots are coming into a central count anyway. Then there's a number of details that Colorado still needs to resolve. What will the risk limit be? That's something I think for the legislators or the Secretary of State's office in rulemaking to think about. But you know, what's an acceptable risk limit? Which contests should be audited? My understanding of the law right now is that all contests would be subject to a risk limiting audit under the current law. But I understand now that maybe I'm overreading.
I think the current law is that all contests are eligible to be audited, meaning the Secretary's of State's office can adopt a rule that requires all, or it may be fewer than all. Mm-hmm. So I think the current law is not terribly specific with respect to the requirements of the risk limiting audit itself.
And then another issue that has come up in conversation really recently is how do you deal with adjudicated ballots that have been remade? Do you trust the process by which the judges remake the ballot and deal and just use the remade ballot in the audit? Or do you use the audit as an opportunity to check the judge's adjudication process as well, and go back to the original voter mark paper or voter verified paper in the audit? So that's all I had prepared to say today, because I really expected that the audience would have a lot of questions, and I'm not sure exactly what people are most interested in or concerned about, so I'm here and available.
I'd like to go back to when you first started, and you was talking about your manifest, which you put on the outside, we'll call it a tub or whatever that is holding the ballots. Mm-hmm. If you sort those down to what you're saying, you're going to, the system is going to have to give you a report of each tub. Other words, I mean, or you're going to have to sort the ballots before. I didn't understand.
They don't need to be sorted. The idea is, you know, for the county to be able to say, I had 72,912 ballots cast in this contest, in this election. They are divided into 127 tubs. Tub number one has 512 ballots in it. I mean, that's what needs to happen.
And that would come after the election is finished to be able to get that kind of a report, because with mail ballots, we're getting ballots and they are feeding them in so many days before the election, and then they wouldn't be able to run that type of report until all ballots are in. Is that what you're seeing?
The manifest, you need to have it before you start the audit. You need to know how many ballots you got and how they're organized so that you can draw a sample from them. But you'd be constructing your manifest as you batch and scan and put away the ballots. But it wouldn't be complete until, you know, essentially you've completed the canvas except for the audit.
That helps me, because they do keep track of the batches that are in there, but it's not down to what ballot types is in there and all that. Yep. But they keep track of, here's the batch number such and such to such and such, and they know how many ballots are in that ballot box and how many has been rejected and sent away.
The crucial thing there, or at least ideally, you wouldn't be relying on the voting system to do the counting of the paper.
That's right.
It would be an independent count of how much paper is in each of these tubs.
And at that time, I think in all the counties I've been in, it is individually counted before it goes to the machine.
Before we go on further, Dr. Stark, I have a couple of people, and I'm not sure if they're wanting to do public comment or if they have questions for you. So we have Mr. Harvey Branscombe and Gail Maxwell wishing to speak to the committee. If you wouldn't mind, please stating your name and the organization that you're representing, please.
Harvey Branscombe. I am representing myself here. I'm from Eagle County. I have a this is an important moment in a roughly 10-year project of mine, which was to obtain the level of accuracy and confidence you can get in an election from having individual cast vote records associated with scans and paper ballots. And I actually introduced Philip Stark to Senator Ken Gordon here in Colorado sometime in the mid-2000s. In 2007, I was a candidate in a home rule election in Eagle County, and the election was tabulated on the Diebold AccuVote system, the precinct scanner. And it turned out I had actually learned a lot about that system previously. I'll skip that part of the story. But I had warned our clerk that there's a possibility that there could be missed tabulations on that system. And in fact, it turned out that in the middle of the election, not after completing a logic and accuracy test, that there was roughly 5% miscount going on for a particular candidate in the election. And it was due, we later discovered, she discovered, the clerk, that it was due to tiny bits of particles of toner that had been transferred across in ballots that had been folded, and they actually appeared in the target of a candidate, but they were not visible to the naked eye. So it turned out that that actually it was a heavily undervoted contest because it was a home rule commissioner contest with many candidates per contest. And the only way that was discovered was due to a slight increase in the number of overvotes that were showing up whenever a voter happened to fully vote the contest and not including the candidate for whom the toner was voting. So the reason I tell the story is because it's an example of how a system that was already in place, had been used in many elections, actually could have a problem that was unexpected, needed to be discovered by an audit, and it's the kind of problem we have to anticipate with new systems. That unexpected, coming from, it's a technical problem, it was an error, wasn't a result of fraud, but it's something we have to watch out for. And I think it's partly why Teek Simonton has been so careful in asking questions and providing input to this committee, which I think is very helpful. I want to commend her for that. The Colorado statutory audit, I heard Dwight Shellman say, I'm listening to the meetings, and he said that the Colorado statutory audit will be used according to Secretary of State rules for the 8 pilot counties, and the risk-limiting audit would be a mock risk-limiting audit. I'm concerned about that because the rule, the Secretary of State's rule, actually calls for a retabulation of a set of ballots that are not the, that do not produce the same outcome as the election night. The statute says that election night totals should be compared to a hand count of the same ballots. And I would hope that the committee would advise to change that recommendation so that election night totals would be compared to a hand count for this audit. Because even though that statutory audit is not really as good as the risk-limiting audit in terms of being able to verify the outcome of the election, it does actually have a benefit to bolster confidence that the voting system is actually functioning correctly. But even the risk-limiting audit, being a highly optimized audit, is not sufficient for evaluating a voting system, in my opinion, for the purpose of deciding whether or not it should be used statewide for the indefinite future. So while I'm, and that's why I believe it's very important to adopt a policy of both performing an audit and, but also allowing for full oversight. So this oversight comes in a couple of different forms. It comes in the form of access to the election evidence in the form of paper ballots, the scans, and the cast vote records. And you know that I have proposed to open records request those. I was hoping that the committee would facilitate that by advising me how to formulate my records request in the most amenable manner, but I haven't received a response to that, so I will go ahead and issue that records request in advance and also at the appropriate time when the ballots become available. But also watching is the other aspect of oversight that needs to occur, particularly so in this election, and more so than it would be in these pilot elections, more so than normal, because there will be aspects of the election that we missed. It's been talked about in this committee. I recognize that there's a limited time and access and so forth, but you all have the access to watch. It turns out to be difficult for me to get access to watch. I may have to form a citizen, ballot issue committee on the Proposition BB in order to be able to assign myself to be a watcher in this election statewide. And since I'm having trouble getting local access from candidates, I may actually do that. I wanted to compliment Donetta Davidson for her input in the committee in respect to cost and support and so forth. Aspects of the evaluation of the system, very important. I tend to focus on tabulation accuracy and the ability to perform oversight, but it's very important to have those other aspects. And Teek Simonton has put a lot of good input in on convenience for the election official, which the vendors seem to avoid in their presentation of the systems at industry conferences and in their marketing materials. And so this pilot's going to be incredibly important for assessing that. And Dwight Shellman has mentioned, quite rightly so, and importantly for this meeting, that the risk-limiting audit needs to be determined whether or not these systems are amenable to performing a risk-limiting audit, and I wholly support any effort the counties make and you guys support to determine whether or not the risk-limiting audit can be effectively performed. And I hope that counties will actually perform a risk-limiting audit that would satisfy Dr. Stark, and I hope you will not discourage them from doing so. I hope they will be encouraged to do so. What's missing, I think, is an assessment of whether these systems are good for the public access and public access to evidence. I don't know if Professor Stark actually mentioned evidence-based elections, but that's his mantra. That's what we're trying to achieve, is an election based on physical evidence that the public and the election officials can both agree upon, and there is a trail of evidence that starts from the eligibility of the ballots to the chain of custody and the tabulation evidence via the cast vote records, et cetera. We need to be able to achieve that evidence, access to that evidence in the public. And in addition, we need more evidence in this election than we would in an ordinary election, in my opinion. And that's because some of these systems are being used for the first time, definitely the first time in Colorado. And we're trying to evaluate them for the purpose of long-term investment. So I'm concerned when I hear Dwight Shellman say that we're going to ask for the reports that are needed in this election, that are deemed to be needed by the counties, for example, as if this were an ordinary election. But it's not, and I know that you've actually requested the audit logs, and I think that's very important. And that's not a record that's often printed out. It usually is only printed out when somebody like me asks for it. But I'm glad the committee has asked for it. But that's not the only access to evidence that we need for a full evaluation. I'm hoping, as I said, that I will get access to all those ballots and that I can personally go in and see ballots that I need to see in order to check that my scans that I'm receiving by records request are good, and also check that the cast vote records. So I'm going to go beyond what a risk-limiting audit would do if I can afford it. And that's another aspect to this. It's possible the counties will make it too expensive for me to get access to the records, and I was hoping for help from the Secretary of State's office along those lines, because the Secretary of State's office can, in fact, issue a records request themselves and actually create the need for the redacted records. And that is where the cost is going to come from for my access to these records. So I was hoping for a response about that topic. In general, it's important that you prepare the county. I'm going to finish up.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, if I may just jump in here. We have limited time with Dr. Stark here, so I may respectfully ask that Mr. Brandstrom ask direct questions to Dr. Stark here because of his time.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. Anyway, I'd just like the committee to prepare for the public's needs to get access to the evidence so that we can go beyond what the official audits will do and determine the tabulation accuracy of these systems. For example, I've records requested the ballots from Denver, and in the first hour of looking at ballot scans and cast vote records, I found a ballot that had been misadjudicated by the system, did not go to human adjudication. So I know that I will find things like that that will become interesting to you in the evaluation of the systems. What I wanted to ask Dr. Sark about is something I know he's interested in, which is the relationship of batch size to the effectiveness of the audits he's proposed and the potential for auditing with smaller batch sizes. And I'm not talking about what amounts to the batch size for the risk-limiting audit, which is a single ballot, but rather the bundling of the ballots for the purpose of tabulation, so that you would choose, say, 50 ballots or 25 ballots or 50 ballots or 250 ballots. It does make a difference to the functionality of the risk-limiting audit when you're trying to find a single ballot in a batch of 25 versus 250. So I thought you might want to mention that here at least.
Sure. I want to agree with what you said, that a risk-limiting audit is not designed to check whether the equipment and system and so forth are functioning perfectly. And you might want a higher level of scrutiny in making a major purchase decision for the state of Colorado rather than just a risk-limiting audit. The function of a risk-limiting audit is to check that the outcome of the contest is right. An outcome means the set of winners. Did the system as deployed today identify the right set of winners? And I think the reason for having a risk-limiting, I don't want to speak for the Secretary of State's office, but I think the reason for having the risk-limiting audit as part of this pilot is not to demonstrate that the equipment is working properly, but because Colorado needs to prepare for the routine risk-limiting audits and it coming in 2017, and therefore needs to know that this equipment can support it. So I think it's fulfilling a different function. Correct me if I'm wrong. Regarding the batch size, what you're alluding to, I think, is one of the methods of matching a cast vote record to the corresponding piece of paper involves keeping the ballots in the same order in which they were scanned and then counting into piles of ballots to identify a particular ballot, like the 17th or 117th ballot in a bundle, so that you can go and look at the cast vote record that the system exported for that particular ballot and compare the two. This doesn't affect the statistical properties or the risk limit or anything. The batch size for this purpose is a logistical decision, and it's tied in part to whether that's the mechanism you're relying on to match a cast vote record to a piece of paper. If that is what you're doing and counting into a pile, obviously it's a lot harder and a lot more time consuming to find a ballot that's in the middle of a stack of 1,500 ballots than it is to find a ballot that's near the middle of a stack of 25 ballots. And so the smaller the batch size you use, the easier it is to count into the stacks to identify the ballot you're looking for later. On the other hand, the more time consuming it is to scan your ballots in the first place, because you've got to divide them into smaller bundles. And then presumably there's some reporting requirements along with the individual bundles that you scan and so forth. So there's a logistic trade-off for the local election official in deciding what size bundle to use if they're relying on scanning order as the mechanism to match the cast vote record to the piece of paper. I don't know whether the Secretary's office is contemplating any rulemaking around batch size or guidance or whatnot.
This is Dwight Shellman. The current statute says that we will conduct risk-limiting audits commencing with the coordinated election in 2017 pursuant to rules adopted by the Secretary of State's office. I don't know what those rules will ultimately take the form of and whether or not we would dictate a particular batch size. I would note that it very much depends, I think, on the systems capability going forward. For example, what Philip just said about having to count into a batch of 1,500 or 1,200 ballots to identify a specific piece of paper and associate it with a cast vote record, yes, it does take a long time to count. And frankly, human beings are terrible at counting the number of pieces of paper that they're trying to get to, which is a huge problem. But some of these systems currently, for example, imprint a sequential number following the scan. So, and the ballots, county's business processes will capture the, for each batch, will capture the range of sequential numbers. They will have a report that will tell us what transfer case or storage container those ballots are sealed in. And in that case, because there are going to be sequential numbers, even though the batches may be very large, it should be relatively easy to drill down and find the specific ballot that we're looking for. Not all of these systems have that capability. So certainly,
We are reviewing the cast vote records now that we've obtained from each of these systems, and Harvey, we'll put them on the website. You can, you're free to look at them. Some of them are more amenable to conducting risk-limiting audits than others. You know, just from the provider's standpoint, I think everybody, I hope everybody in the world understands that it is not a voting system requirement anywhere in this country that a system efficiently support a risk-limiting audit. At this juncture, this is a very unique issue to Colorado. It's not even contained in our voting system requirements at this point. So I hope people understand I am not disparaging a system or a system provider because its cast vote records require more work on the back end to make them work with a risk-limiting audit. It's not surprising that their systems don't do this because it's not required anywhere yet. But that's the purpose of this exercise, is to say which of these systems make it easiest on the election officials and the public and the Secretary of State's office, so that when it comes time that we have to have risk-limiting audits statewide, we know that the system we're recommending to the Secretary is going to be able to handle that particular function. But that was a very long answer to a very short question, which is, do you know what the rules are going to say yet? And I don't, and I think we as an organization and as a collection of election officials in this state, we don't know that answer yet, because those rules will need not only to accommodate whatever system we're looking at right now, they will need to accommodate the legacy systems that we have in place, because, you know, those counties may continue using those systems for a number of years. Thanks.
And this is Harvey Branscombe. So you brought up an important point, which is that something I thought would not happen in Colorado, because when I started into this project, I was told that Colorado was too small for the vendors to pay attention to. And I want to thank the vendors for paying attention to Colorado, and thank Colorado for bringing in Dr. Stark and paying attention to the, putting ourselves at the state of the art of new voting systems, so, and new voting system regulation. So it's crucial that the whole country is definitely watching Colorado and what Colorado decides to do. What you advise is going to be important to other states. I want to quickly mention that we did actually have numbers on ballots in Colorado, in about half the ballots, on all the HART system ballots. And we've had numbers on DRE in a number of cases. And I've actually, in Eagle County, we executed an attempt at a risk-limiting audit using numbered ballots and randomly selecting, using the numbers on the cast vote records, which are VPATs, VVPATs. And that was successful. It's arduous because the VPATs themselves come in the form of rolls that have to be rolled out on the floor or so. So,
been there, done that. Yeah, no fun.
Yeah, and it's also important to note, I think, in passing, that this issue of order of the ballots for the purpose of identifying them does not have to be a problem for privacy. The ballots can be separated from the envelopes, and the ordering can be and needs to be either sorted and shuffled in order to make sure that there are not any relationships between the envelopes and the ballots themselves. And then the order can matter.
There, I forgive me for talking on top of it. There, I think the issue is more with precinct count optical scan, not with the central count or the mail-in. It's more if you have a relatively small number of ballots being cast, and you can. Anyway.
Well, that definitely is a problem, but it is also a problem with central count because of the way some counties are trying to maintain the continuity of their ballot manifest, basically, with the envelope manifest, and so there are. I think we must get away from that. We must break the connection between the envelopes and the ballots. We cannot have a batch of envelopes be equivalent to a batch of ballots because we have multiple precincts.
Mr. Branscombe, I hate to cut you off, but we have somebody else that wishes to come up, and sure, we've got a limited time with Dr. Stark.
Yep.
So, thank Gail you. Maxwell. And again, please state your name and identify the organization or who you're representing, please.
My name is Gail Maxwell, and I don't know that I'm really representing anybody but myself, but I am the worker bee in Gilpin County, which means a lot of things that happen with elections rest on my shoulder. So I just have a couple concerns of what this process is that you talked about. And one of my concerns is you were talking about that we do this risk limit audit, and it will give us the outcome in case the outcome wasn't done correctly. And so when you find a mistake like this, and you've already reported to the Secretary of State on that night, and we do this process and we find a huge error, that takes it to another realm in the public as to why we didn't catch that error sooner. So I'm kind of confused with that.
I don't know what the timing and order of operations that's being contemplated by Colorado is, but the idea, the way we've done these audits in California, and actually the way we did it, now I guess Arapahoe was sort of after the fact, is that the audit takes place during the canvas period and is used to check the outcome before the outcome is announced. So the outcome is not official until after the audit. You've done your best work. You think you're done with the canvas, and now you double check. I cringed a little bit when you sort of said if it wasn't done properly. It's not an issue of done properly. It's every system makes errors at some rate. I mean, voters aren't going to follow instructions on how to mark ballots. There's always something that happens. And the question is, did enough of that happen to alter the outcome, the apparent outcome of the election or not? And one of the things that a risk limiting audit doesn't try to do is determine whether you got the votes right to the last digit. It's only trying to find out, did you name the right winners? And kind of part of the point is there's some kinds of errors that actually don't matter for whether you found the right winner. And when I say error, I don't mean somebody made a mistake. I just mean that the system altogether, including the human, mechanical, voter, everything, is not going to be perfect. We don't live in that world.
And then, Dwight, my question would be to you, would we take this type of audit and replace it or go into legislation to replace what we currently have with the canvas and the post-election audit?
So the legislation exists now. It becomes effective in the 2017 coordinated election that says statewide we need to be implementing a risk-limiting audit. Admittedly, most of those details about how exactly we do that, the Secretary of State needs to adopt rules on and provide specific guidance on that. We're not there yet. Gail, your question raises an important point, which is starting in the coordinated election in 2017, we will not be conducting the statutory audit that we have now. We will shift to a risk-limiting audit model. And those audits are conceptually very different. The statutory audit that we have now really audits specific devices, right?
Right.
To see that they tabulated the ballots that were cast on them correctly, or in some cases, you retabulate 500 ballots and then check that tabulation from that device with those 500 ballots. What a risk-limiting audit does is audit an election. It really doesn't care about the device. And the purpose of a risk-limiting audit is you look at enough pieces of paper to know that if we have a risk limit, for example, of 10%, when we're done with the audit, we have a 90% probability, if you will, that the outcome is correct. And maybe that's the risk limit that the state adopts. Maybe the state adopts a 5% risk limit. I don't have the answers to those questions. But the audits are just completely different focus. One is auditing the election, regardless of the device that any randomly selected ballot was tabulated on. The other is auditing the particular device. And the purpose of the risk-limiting audit is when you're completed with it, you know, subject to your risk limit, that the outcome was correct, even if along the way you discover the sometimes inevitable few errors that Philip mentioned.
Forgive me for talking. I just want to correct one thing you said, which is when you're done, if you had a 10% risk limit, you sort of have a 90% chance that the outcome is right. And that's actually, it's a little more subtle than that. What it is if the outcome was wrong, you had a 90% chance of correcting it. If the outcome was right in the first place, it's not going to make it wrong. And if all of the outcomes are right, when the audit starts, all the outcomes are right when the audit finishes. So it's not like auditing can somehow decrease the chance that the outcome is right. It's really just additional scientific, quantitative, defensible evidence that that the job was done well, right?
And it's a concern to me because of the way it's set up right now, and I'm trying to understand all the new processes since I am a pilot county and I'm learning new processes. I don't want to be kept with some more processes to redo something. If it's going to take the place of something that we're already doing, I mean, I feel like with our LATs, we are testing the equipment itself. When the election is over, are we verifying what type of election do we have? And that's always been my question with the Secretary of State. So with the information that you're providing with us, I'm hoping that it will fold into something that all of us can use and have it beneficial, not another layer of something else that we need to do when we're already tired. And I'm just telling you, Philip, by the end of an election and after my big 20-hour day that I put in, I'm not usually a happy camper. And I don't stay happy for many weeks. And usually Thanksgiving is a good time to let me have some time off because I'm so tired and I say things that are not correct. So that's part of the reason why I was here today, to try to figure out what type of processes you're trying to put into place. Also, just one more comment with this. When we do this type of risk audit, and I know that the public is always going to be involved with it, but that is still yet another layer that me as a worker looks at. Okay, I've gone through, I've read your steps, I've done your steps, I've complied, and then I have Harvey at my back door. And like I say, I'm not a happy camper for quite a while after elections. So, and it may not be Harvey. It might be another activist that's banging on the door, or it's another something that I have to justify in the process of the election. Is this going to take part of this problem away from us?
So I can't speak for Harvey, but there are a couple things I want to say. So one is I would hope that many people will find the evidence generated by a risk-limiting audit more persuasive than the evidence generated by the statutory audit. It somehow checks the right thing. An analogy or metaphor I've been trying to work on is relying on certification of the equipment and logic and accuracy testing and whatnot is like a surgeon performing brain surgery and saying, I know the patient is fine because the scalpel was sterile. I put it in the autoclave right before, so forth and so on. And a risk-limiting audit is saying, maybe we should look at the patient. It's somehow looking at an election by election, how did it go, rather than were my tools in good order before I started.
And then my last question is, with this new system coming up, I'm just surprised that we haven't asked the vendors to create a program for this risk limit audit. I mean, my vendor has a very good product going out there, but I know many of the other vendors have not quite got themselves up to the 21st century that they can do the scanning of the ballots and produce the information that you wanted to have. And why we didn't take that information to these vendors first and say, can you write a program for this before it comes time like next year, my county, and I'm not saying anybody else, but we have to buy something next year because our stuff is dead. So I'm just curious why we didn't get this pushing through with some of the vendors so that they could be creating this information.
So I've a number of the vendors, I've had conversations with most of the vendors over the years, and some of them have asked for advice on what do their systems need to do to support efficient audits. Most of them, Colorado's in a unique position because you have your own certification rather than relying on a federal certification. Most of the vendors don't seem at all interested in retrofitting anything they've got because it would require recertifying at the federal level. So they've instead looked into incorporating better auditability into future releases rather than retrofitting. But if your county is already using paper, then ballot polling audits are an option without any change to your equipment. And again, if the margins are not microscopically small, the workload involved in doing the ballot polling audit is not, you know, is not unreasonable. If the margins get to be microscopically small, then you've got a hard problem no matter how you look at it. You might just decide to do a complete recount. I mean, who knows what? I don't want to, but it's, so there is something you can do without buying new equipment. And ultimately, the trade-offs in expense of the equipment itself, in setup costs and reporting and the kind of data tracking that you need to do for a comparison audit versus a ballot polling audit, I think Colorado is planning to make those decisions at the state level rather than leaving them up to the individual LEOs to optimize their own logistics. I guess it makes sense to have guidance from on high from whoever's collecting the most information about this and kind of has the broadest view. By the same token, I think there needs to be a good dialogue going on so that they're informed by the logistical constraints that you face in your own jurisdiction to know whether there should be something other than a one-size-fits-all solution. Maybe there should be a couple of sizes at least. I don't know.
And I appreciate that.
And Gail, just so you understand, it's not that we haven't asked the, you know, we've ignored this aspect. Colorado has very specific statutes and requirements for temporarily approving systems. The ability to efficiently support a risk-limiting audit is not one of them. This is something that was not captured during the testing or the temporary approval campaign because it's not part of our requirements yet. We are going to ask these vendors, once we figure out the specific shortcomings that we identify, we're going to ask them, will you commit to develop what we need to run a risk-limiting audit so that we can implement it by 2017? And that's not as good as being able to demonstrate it right now, but it's clearly on the radar, and we have to address it as best we can.
Okay. Because I know that I have two contentious races at this point in my county.
Oh, joy.
And it's going to be an interesting night for me. Plus, I have another issue going on that I need to take up with the Secretary of State. But it is so vital that what we count that night and what we adjudicate that night is so true to whatever that voter intent is for us, for me, because these races are harsh at this point. So we will, even before you came out here, we would be performing our own audit just to make sure we get those two races just down to the bullet, because it is going to be at the bullet.
I think that the word audit is unfortunate because it already sets things up as if somebody's done something wrong or conjures up an IRS audit or something like that. And it's really a double check. It's a double check.
Okay. Well, you're right. It's the wrong word. I'm sorry. It is the wrong word because it does sound like you're getting ready to line me up on the firing squad. And I have several people in my county ready to do that already, and you'd have to take a number. So I would, you know, I'd like to see, I know it's too hard. The word is wrong because it does conjure up, and in the public's eye, it conjures up that you're putting me and the clerk right there on the target again.
Yeah, you're busted. We're auditing you. Yeah.
Yeah, regardless of what I'm doing. Yeah.
I did want to say that there are two systems being developed from the ground up for auditability. One is Travis County, Texas, Austin's StarVote system, which has gone out for RFP, and in fact, at least one bid has come back. That's in evaluation, and the other is LA County, California. They're not as far along in the development process, but both of them are talking about being largely, if not entirely, open source, and are being designed for ballot level risk limiting audits from the ground up. None of the vendors that I'm aware of has taken that tack yet, but the time scale on which those systems would become available may be too late for the uniform voting system stuff happening in Colorado. So.
Thank you, Ms. Caldwell.
Thank you.
Donato?
Is it my understanding, like Gail said, a close race, would you set your statistics higher in a close race to check more ballots? The closer it is, the more, I mean, and that would be part of the SOS rules. But I would think that that makes sense. If you don't have close races, you wouldn't be checking as much as what you would be checking if there was close races, because obviously that's where it,
yes.
Where so, it really meets the mustard, I guess, is what you want to say.
So for a given risk limit, if you decide that your risk limit is going to be 1%, the smaller the margin, the more ballots you will have to look at to achieve that risk limit. But also, the more discrepancies you find, if those discrepancies if correcting the discrepancy would narrow the margin, then also the more ballots you're going to have to look at. So whatever you see that sort of calls the outcome into question or doesn't give you additional confidence that the outcome is right is going to lead to looking at more ballots. And one of those things is in a contest with a narrow margin, there's just a smaller tolerance for error. Fewer discrepancies could cause the outcome to be wrong.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
Connie?
I was going to tag on to what, this is Connie Engmeyer, and I was just going to tag on to what Donetta had said. Some of the things I've heard from some of the counties on the risk limiting is the time it's going to take, and so their concern is the canvassing process. Again, this is more kind of like a Secretary of State issue about extending the canvas timeline for this. And then one of the other counties had expressed that maybe this is just more like a recount, and maybe they should just recount to begin with.
Let me address this. This is Dwight. When we started this process, we talked about for one county for each system, we were going to conduct a risk limiting audit. That needs to be modified, and I mentioned this in the past few meetings, because the precise capabilities of these systems to accommodate an RLA is still under evaluation. We don't know exactly what that looks like. We have a very limited time to figure it out. The counties need to know what's required of them before they start counting the ballots. For that reason, I want these counties to conduct the statutory audit, which is what they would do if they weren't piloting these systems at all. That enables them to go ahead to the canvas and close the election officially in the books. They need to be able to do that under the ordinary time frame. And then what I want to do with one of each of the counties is conduct I'm going to call it a mock risk limiting audit, so that the purpose of this exercise is not to conduct a full risk limiting audit on the entire election in one of these counties. It is to determine the ability of each system to support an efficient risk limiting audit. And we don't need to conduct a full audit under risk-limiting protocols in order to get good information on that question. So I want to narrow the scope because I totally understand where the counties are coming from. This is an unusual circumstance because we are piloting systems in a real election, and they need to be able to close the books legally, if you will, on the real election in the ordinary way.
Can I chime in just briefly? So you mentioned that it was like a recount, and indeed it can lead to a recount, although the legal environment in which it happens is rather different, right? That it can lead to a complete hand count of the ballots if you uncover discrepancies along the way that cast doubt on the outcome. But if the outcome is correct, it should involve looking at very, very few ballots, depending on the risk limit and depending on the margin. But for a risk limit of 10%, the number of ballots you have to look at on the assumption that you don't find any problems is something like 5 divided by the margin. So if you have a 10% margin, 5 divided by 10% is 50 ballots. If you have a 1% margin, You're looking at 500 ballots. It's not, so compared to even the workload that you have to do right now for the statutory audit, it isn't necessarily bad. That said, it's less predictable than knowing you just have to do 500.
Right.
And that I understand is a source of a lot of discomfort for the local elections officials.
This is Donetta Davidson, and I also think that the unknown for them is, you know, they're just so unsure of what it's going to be, and there's always, you know, the concern about the unknown for any of us on any subject. You know, I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised, though, and I, for Gail's, you know, as I've been out in reviewing the counties and asking questions from the counties, I think Dwight's going to be really happy that every system out there has got far more capability in giving reports down to whether it's a race or by ballot type, by precinct. You know, they've got lots of capabilities that a risk-limiting audit on any type of equipment, I think, is going to, you know, we may want to tweak, but it's not going to be like the vendor has to do a complete overhaul of that portion of their system.
But in on one other thing that's not my business, which is the length of the canvas period. And if you are going to do this routinely, given that there is some variability in the workload, and if you end up with a squeaker of a contest with a really narrow margin, or, you know, probably the little Elio's prayer is, you know, let there not be a tie or something. Right? then there's going to be labor at the back end, and California, as an interim measure under AB 2023, actually had a provision where the audit could continue beyond the canvas. You somehow and could then retroactively alter the outcome, which felt to me like a disaster in the making, just or lawsuits in the making and whatnot. But that was contemplated. Colorado's canvas is much shorter than California. You 10 days, 2 weeks?
I think 17 days.
17 days. We're at 28 or something like that. On the other hand, you're getting the vast majority of your ballots by mail. They're coming into a central location. It might be that there's some efficiencies that will make it easier to accommodate an audit within the current canvas period. But that feels like a short period to me.
Well, considering, though, I think we have to consider all the laws that California has, you're still counting ballots up to 15 days after. Yes. Colorado has a much shorter time frame there. So, you know, that's part of why we can have the audit earlier. But we also have it there in case there is a recount after the canvas. Our recounts are after canvas. And then that's the final canvas then when that recount comes in. So that part could be left like it is currently, and, you know, but all the time frames are going to have to be looked at, I think, once we get to that point.
Steve?
Yes, this is Steve Moreno. Dr. Stark, I guess I'm going to ask if I understand this right, the risk limiting audit has been used in some parts of California and your area. What examples have come out of the risk-limiting audit? Was it the voter error? Was it the machines? If you're able to share that.
First, risk-limiting audits have been done in Colorado as well, twice now in Arapaho. Boulder has done one. Is that, am I forgetting anybody? In California, we've done them in somewhere between 12 and 20 counties, I can't remember. As pilots, many of them were done under a grant from the EAC. None of them, they were all done at a 10% risk limit. Originally, we were working on the logistics and we were doing batch-based audits, which would be using, instead of individual ballots and individual cast vote records, all the ballots cast in a precinct or all the ballots cast in a precinct on election day versus all the ballots cast in a precinct by mail. So they were much, much larger ballots. And what we figured out pretty quickly was that was never going to fly as a long-term solution. And trying to get to being able to audit at the individual ballot level just because of the efficiency that that brings. But because none of the voting systems could export individual cast vote records, in order to do an audit at that level, we had to rescan the ballots and create our own cast vote records using other technology, which then adds an enormous amount of overhead to the process as well. And it's clear that that's not a long-term solution either. You want the voting system of record to export the cast vote record. That said, we discovered maybe four or five discrepancies that we could trace back to a cause in the course of doing these risk-limiting audits. One of them was a vote-by-mail ballot where the county's procedures for inspecting undervotes involved if a ballot, when it was scanned, was determined to have by the software to have an undervote, the staff would look at the front page of the ballot and see whether the marks were generally dark and good. And if so, they would treat the undervote as a deliberate undervote and not look at the particular contest in which it occurred. If the marks were vague or light or whatever, then it would look at the particular contest and see by hand whether it was an undervote or not and override the interpretation if necessary. This particular ballot was a vote-by-mail ballot. The stickum of the envelope had stuck to one of the marks, and when the envelope was opened, it tore off part of the mark. The front page of the ballot was well marked, so when they looked at it, they thought the overvote was deliberate, but if you looked at the actual thing, you could see that there was just part of the mark missing. In the other couple of cases, the open source sort of research grade software, which is OpenCount, that was developed by David Wagner at Berkeley and a number of his students, was clearly doing a better job of identifying voter intent than the commercial vendors' voting systems were, and it was typically just a vague mark or an X through a vote target rather than filling it in or something like that. It was just a little bit more sensitive, and it supported more LEO intervention in verifying, in sort of adjudicating individual vote targets as part of the process before you do the tabulation. So it made it possible to do quality improvement of things before you get to the point of actually auditing it. So at the end of the day, you were auditing something that was more accurate than the vendor system was. But in every case, I think there was maybe one audit where we discovered that there was a batch of ballots that hadn't been scanned.
When these audits were done, this is Donetta Davidson, when these audits were done on, you know, systems, vendor systems, as you mentioned, was this their old legacy systems that was out there? So it's not what we're looking at now.
That's
the systems
correct.
That have been improved.
Okay. These, I think many of these are the first time they're being fielded anywhere, my understanding.
Thank you. Yeah.
This is Clarissa. Any further questions from the committee? Anybody else? Dwight?
Philip needs to catch a plane back to Berkeley. So why don't we just take a quick break here for a few minutes and come back in about 5 minutes, and we'll take a look at that judge's evaluation form, and I think that'll do it for today.
Thank you.